אתם עם SBS בעברית.
Hi everyone, this is Michael Bartura with SBS Hebrew and I'm here with Adam Lewis Klein, who is a writer, anthropologist and a musician and currently is doing a PhD in anthropology at McGill University over in Montreal. He explores Jewish peoplehood, Jewish sovereignty and contemporary forms of anti-Jewish hate, drawing connections between civilizational identity and the politics of indigeneity. Adam, pleased to have you on the show. Thanks for your time. Do you want to tell us something about your work which is really memorable? I understand that you traveled back and forth to the Amazon to work with the Desena people in the Vopa region of the Amazon, and you obviously have some experiences to share. So anything that really stands out as a value or a sort of a favorite memory from those travels?
Yeah, so as a PhD candidate in anthropology, prior to October 7th, I was working in the Amazon with the Desena people, and I was thinking about their conceptions of peoplehood and their own kind of, they understand themselves as a kind of ethno-religion in which their own covenantal story, their own relationship to their own particular god with their particular name is kind of essential to their identity and who they are. And whenever I would talk to them and ask them about their culture, they would tell me, you know, Umukorimasa, that's the name of their god. Umukorimasa is also the name of, means a Desena person. And so that was already kind of what I was thinking about and thinking with while I was there prior to October 7th. I had been there for about 3 months without any phone or computer service, completely off the grid. And then October 9th, I arrived in a small town, still in the Amazon, but I had internet and phone service for the first time in months. And I opened my computer, and it was images from the Nova Music Festival on my Facebook feed. That was the first thing I saw after months off the grid. And soon after, I also witnessed the reactions of my colleagues in the kind of left academic space. I was soon purged just for showing basic solidarity with Israelis, and then for speaking up as well against what I was seeing, the bigotry, the justifications of violence and the harassment and kind of mob rule that was already happening and taking over the academy. And so it was from there that I felt I really needed to develop an account using, you know, the academic tools I'd learned about and I sort of mastered in the academy of anti-Zionism, of what I was experiencing and what I came to understand as a holistic ideology that constructs Jews in new ways that are different from the anti-Semitism of the past.
You say that anti-Zionism is a cultural phenomenon, a symbolic system, almost like a mythological tool to turn against Jews in general and certainly against Israelis. Do you want to share a little bit more about how do you define Zionism as such in order for us to understand your definition of anti-Zionism and indeed extrapolate on that idea that anti-Zionism has turned into a mythology?
Yeah, so I actually define Zionism very simply as something almost unremarkable. It was a national liberation movement for the Jewish people to have a state in the wake of many emerging national liberation movements in the first half of the 20th century and the late 19th century. Different empires were sort of dissolving, the Prussian Empire, Ottoman Empire, Russian Empire, and new sort of forms of national identity were kind of emerging. And in that sense, Zionism was very unremarkable. And it had a project, which was to create the State of Israel, which was achieved in 1948. So what really interests me is more than Zionism, anti-Zionism. And so I actually like to write anti-Zionism without a hyphen, similar to how many people now write anti-Semitism without a hyphen. So the reason I do that is because I think that anti-Zionism is not so much dependent on what Zionism is, as if it's some kind of equal and opposite reaction to Zionism, but a specific way of constructing Zionism, constructing Israel, and constructing a kind of figure or character who is the Zion. And this character is constructed in specific ways. So the three core libels of anti-Zionism that I identify are the colonizer, apartheid, and genocide libels. And they're ways of constructing Israel as an essentially evil state, and their ways of constructing Israelis and those marked as Zionists as essentially evil, as essentially immoral, like you said. And so the colonizer libel is basically that Jews and Israelis are white European colonizers who are alien to the land of Israel. They don't have any true connection to the land of Israel, and they are white Europeans. So unlike classical anti-Semitism of the 19th century and 20th century, which spoke of Jews as Semites, that is, as Orientals, as non-European, anti-Zionism is actually inverted its characterization of Jews. And in the apartheid libel is that Israel is fundamentally founded on Jewish supremacy, or that Jews and those marked as Zionists and Israelis are sort of inherently racist towards others. And this comes from older anti-Judaic canards about Jews as a very exclusive people who hate the Goyim. And those kind of canards made their way into early anti-Zionist formulations. And even in human rights reports today, like the Israeli human rights organization, B'Tselem, they will use terms like Jewish supremacy that you can directly trace to this older anti-Judaic literature, and they are not aware of that. And then there's the genocide libel. And the genocide libel has become very mainstream since October 7th, but has existed for a very long time. For example, the Soviet Union sort of mastered the technique of Holocaust inversion, of depicting Israelis as Nazis. So you get this kind of narrative of cosmic inversion. And this is what I mean when I say that anti-Zionism becomes its own kind of mythos and cosmology, that the Holocaust was treated as a kind of absolute evil. But with Holocaust inversion, the genocide libel, what happens now is there's a kind of inversion of that, where the oppressed have become the oppressors, is the sort of trope within anti-Zionism. Those who had evil done to them in the Holocaust are doing that evil themselves. And that is how Israel is almost essentialized as an inherently genocidal state, because it's a European colonial enterprise to eliminate an indigenous population. So all those libels are interconnected, and they form a kind of single symbolic system that constructs Israel as inherently evil.
Critics would argue that anti-Zionism isn't inherently racist or hateful, but instead is a political stance opposing specific policies or structures, and that conflating all anti-Zionism with prejudice risks stifling legitimate criticism of actions by the Israeli government.
So yeah, I think what you're saying speaks to a widely shared framework today for understanding these issues, which is that there's criticism of Israel and then there's anti-Semitism. Now, this framework often functions essentially to legitimize anti-Zionism, because anti-Zionism is constructed as criticism of Israel, or it's a criticism of Israel that could maybe be hidden, could be secretly motivated by anti-Semitism, or it needs to cross the line into anti-Semitism, is how people often speak, right? And the problem with that is that assumes that anti-Zionism would have to appear like classical anti-Semitism for it to be recognized as a bigotry, right? So I think that model is flawed. But I also hear you saying something else, which is that anti-Zionism itself also, if we say that's a bigotry, then we'll exclude all legitimate criticisms of Israel that aren't anti-Zionism, right? Now, what I try and do when I describe anti-Zionism, when I try and come to a description that provides a language so that we can translate the lived experience of Jews since October 7th and living under anti-Zionism in general, is I try to show people what anti-Zionism is as something very, very specific. There are these specific libels, white colonizer, apartheid, genocide, right? And I try people show people what anti-Zionism is rather than what it's not. But anti-Zionism is really like a phenomenon. It's a social movement. There's millions of people, right, out on the streets spreading anti-Zionist slogans and anti-Zionist libels. And when we see it that way, it's so specific that it doesn't make sense to say that it excludes criticisms of the Israeli government. There's many ways to criticize the Israeli government that just simply are not only not anti-Zionism, but would maybe come from almost an inverse point of view altogether. So I'll give you an example, right? If anti-Zionism says, you know, what's wrong with Israel is that it's a white European state, it represents the West and the sins of colonialism, one could actually say the opposite about some of the problems with the direction that Israel is maybe taking today in a kind of more right-wing or religious fundamentalist point of view that increasingly contradicts Israel's democratic values, right, and notions of equality, right? So if I were to say that, my critique at that level would be not that Israel is a white European state, but that actually it's losing touch with the heritage of the West, with the heritage of liberal democracies, and it's almost becoming, so to speak, too Middle Eastern. It's becoming kind of like these Islamist or fundamentalist neighbors, or becoming a Jewish Iran, in which one would set up a halakhic state that was ruled by rabbis in the same way that Iran is ruled by clerics, and people would be forced to, women would be forced to wear a headscarf, for example. So that's a very meaningful, I think, critique of certain aspects of the Israeli government or where Israel is going as a society today. But it's actually not only not anti-Zionism, it's almost based on the opposite assumptions as anti-Zionism.
If you look at the history of anti-Semitism, you can see sort of different suits that it took upon, right? Like the older one was usually a religious sort of suit, the people who are at fault for crucifixion of Jesus or whatnot. And then it sort of evolved into the kind of European anti-Semitism that was more about a racial sort of type rather than a religious type. And where do you see anti-Zionism sort of, what is anti-Zionism taken on as a cloak? Turn against the Jews because they're imperialists, they're colonialists, they practice apartheid or whatever. How does that show up on the arc of anti-Semitism, the evolution of anti-Semitism as such?
Yeah, so in my view, we have really entered the third stage of Jew hatred. So this model has kind of circulated in the Jewish community for a while. Jonathan Sachs had a great articulation of it in 2017, where he kind of talked about these three phases, kind of race, religion, and nation. And my view is that we've fully entered the anti-Zionist age. So anti-Zionism is the dominant form of Jew hatred in our time, and it acts as the permission structure now for the other forms of Jew hatred to flourish as well. So even classical anti-Semites who talk about race infiltration and conspiracies like the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, you have someone like a neo-Nazi like Nick Fuentes, for example, or kind of people who speak about the Talmud and Christ killing and these kinds of more theological or Christian anti-Judaic libels, they're often doing it in the context of a discourse around Zionism and Israel. So, for example, Tucker Carlson, an American conservative pundit, he invited on his show a preacher from Bethlehem, I believe, who had written a book called Christ in the Rubble, The Genocide in Gaza. So in that book, he was comparing the Palestinians to Christ as a kind of collective Christ, and then viewing the so-called genocide as a form of the deicide libel. So the Jews committing genocide against Palestinians was the Jews committing, was killing Christ. So we see anti-Zionism becoming a broader frame through which these older forms of anti-Judaism or anti-Semitism are also being articulated in the present.
I do want to ask about the facet of your work with indigenous people and the way that you conflate or see the similarities. There is an indigenous pan to Judaism that has been dispersed throughout the planet because of history, but nevertheless has managed to keep its indigeneity, again that word. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about what you've learned through observing the people in the Amazon and understanding Judaism from an anthropological point of view?
Yeah, I mean, so when I think with the people in the Amazon that I work with, I see that they have had a very similar struggle to Jews, mainly to preserve their culture, right? In the sense of in the face of forces that seek to erase it or to delegitimize that culture as its own particularity. So the people there have obviously been subjected to, in the Amazon, to Catholic missionaries, Colombian, Spanish missionaries who seek to annihilate the culture and convert the people to a form of Christianity that ultimately ends up meaning, you know, assimilation into Western or into the Colombian national culture there. So Jews have had to face very similar things throughout our history. You know, the Spanish Inquisition is the most famous and most direct analog here, attempting to force Jews to give up their specific identity, religion, and spiritual tradition. And so that is very similar, in addition to the kind of land-based religions that many indigenous people have, where they see a certain territory as kind of a sacred center. And contrary to how indigeneity is sometimes understood in the public discourse today, it doesn't mean that a people is always living in the same place. So many peoples have histories of migration, of exile, and return. And so Jewish indigeneity is not about that Jews have always lived in Israel. It's about a story that's kind of built around this sacred center. So we were in Israel, and then we were exiled to Egypt, then we came back, and then we were exiled again. And there's kind of this back and forth of exile and return is the land of Israel itself remains kind of the sacred center of the Jewish story and is kind of essential part of Jewish identity that today is being erased by anti-Zionism, by the anti-Zionist movement. So the anti-Zionist movement, even though it frames itself as anti-colonial, ends up itself being a sort of colonial force in that sense, trying to erase Jews' culture and erase Jews' connection to this territory in the same way that colonialism has often erased other indigenous people's culture and connection to land.
It strikes me that when you talk about the original connection of Jews to any place on the planet, the only common original source is the land of Israel. There isn't any other place on the planet that Jews can claim as being originally theirs. It's a sort of a point that tends to be missed in the general milieu of arguments, you know, on origin and whatnot, because Jews come from so many different places. And yet there is only one common place for them to look at as their land. Or our land, I should say. I want to ask a little bit about, if I understand right, you say Maaz, M-A-A-Z, the movement against anti-Zionism, which is a sort of something that you launched. Can you tell us a little bit more about Maaz?
So, yeah, in the wake of October 7th, as I was trying to articulate an account of anti-Zionism, especially using my anthropological and philosophical background, I was writing publicly, writing a lot of essays, that people were sharing and coming to this framework and speaking about anti-Zionism. And it was a group of activists who found my writing, and they were trying to do something similar from an activist point of view, which was they wanted a public and cultural transformation where more people would speak about anti-Zionism and see anti-Zionism as actually the central problem and not just always be saying, oh, well, it's anti-Semitic. So getting out of that binary, actually, of some people legitimizing anti-Zionism as just criticism of Israel when it actually clearly was not, and other people being unable to really talk about anti-Zionism itself and just saying, oh, it's anti-Semitic, right? And not explaining what anti-Zionism really was and not making clear that it, today it's anti-Zionist libels that are harming so many Jews in the diaspora. Right, it's anti-Zionist libels of Jews as settlers that encourage acts like the Bondi Massacre or people justifying the Bondi Massacre as if it was anti-colonial resistance. Right, so I founded this organization with this group to help push forward this cultural transformation, this transformation in the language that the Jewish community uses, and helping Jews, training Jews to name and label anti-Zionist acts and set up a clear boundary to say they won't accept anti-Zionist violence and to create that emerging consciousness about anti-Zionism. Because anti-Zionism also has its own history and trail of harm. You know, the expulsions of Jews throughout the Middle East and Arab countries in Iraq, in Syria, in throughout North Africa, etc. You know, these expulsions are often not understood today as specifically anti-Zionist, but that's entirely what they were. So Jews were actually marked as Zionist traitors. They were sometimes lynched, like Shafiq Ades in Iraq, or nine Jews that were hung in 1969 in Baghdad in Iraq, you know, and treated as Zionist traitors. And it was on that basis that Jews were persecuted throughout the Middle East. So unfortunately, we've only really told the history of classical anti-Semitism and the Holocaust, and we haven't spent enough time talking about the history of anti-Zionism and its trail of harm. You know, in the Soviet Union, Jewish culture was completely eviscerated and destroyed, and it was the anti-Zionist propaganda, anti-Zionist policies and program of the Soviet Union that led to shutting down, you know, synagogues, that led to making learning Hebrew illegal. And that was kind of what prompted the Refusnik movement and Natan Sharansky's struggle against that kind of anti-Zionism. And I think today we really need to be teaching that story as its own story of Jew hatred and as its own kind of Jew hatred, its own kind of discrimination against Jews that's oblique to the classical anti-Semitism, Nazi Holocaust story. And that needs to be known about on its own terms, because that's the anti-Zionism that's now sweeping through the West. It's having an immense effect in France, in the UK. It's really damaging Jewish life there. And of course, it's also appearing in places like Australia, the United States, and Canada.
Yeah, indeed. Australia is definitely, I think we had a rise of about 350 present in anti-Semitic incidents or so-called anti-Semitic incidents as far as they count them, but essentially they're driven by the anti-Zionist agenda as such. Finally, you know, sort of flywheeling from what you just described, you happen to be Jewish, you're in a dinner party, and this starts to rise up in the conversation. What would be the three nuggets that you can hold on as reasonable arguments in terms of countering the mythology of anti-Zionism when you face it in conversations with friends or with colleagues or at university or at work?
The key really actually is to not debate these claims as if they're sort of good faith claims about Israel, right? The key is to recognize them, that they're functioning as libels, and to get to that point. So the key is actually just to name them, you know. If someone brings up the genocide libel, it's more interesting to say, use the term genocide libel, that's the genocide libel, and say anti-Zionists have been spreading the genocide libel for decades, or anti-Zionists had the genocide libel ready to go on October 7th. And instead of debating the specific claims about whether it's genocide or not, which is often a way to legitimize the spread of the libel and to place Israel under suspicion, it's better to tell the story of the libel itself. So say, well, the Soviet Union charged Israel with genocide in the 70s, or the genocide libel has always been linked to this attempt to depict Israelis as Nazis. And that's what anti-Zionism does.
Anything else you'd like to say?
Just that if people want to know more, they can go to mazaction.org, which is mazaction.org. And we are building a strong presence, actually, in Australia in the wake of the Bondi attacks. And that's something I'm happy about, that we can hopefully make a difference in Australia and push back against the tide of anti-Zionism, which I know has been particularly bad over there. So I encourage people to learn more about Maz and get involved if they're interested.
רוצים לשמוע עוד סיפורים? האזינו דרך האפל פודקאסט, גוגל פודקאסט, ספוטיפיי, או בכל מקום אחר בו ניתן להאזין לפודקאסטים.